Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to The Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we welcome back to The Soapbox our friend, author, activist, on a wide range of issues, Mickey Z. And Mickey and I are going to talk about a couple of articles he recently posted at The Soapbox, at The Soapbox blog. And it's going to be about when never wrong is actually wrong, and when a revolution is not actually a revolution. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Mickey Z.
Mickey Z, welcome back to The Soapbox.
Oh, thanks for having me, Cindy. It's great to be here.
Well, in my introduction to you, I said that I post your writings at The Soapbox, and I really wanted to talk to you about a couple of your articles and your newest book, Occupy These Photos, right?
Yep.
And, let's talk about this. I want to talk about the piece that you did on what Noam Chomsky recently had to say. And the title of your piece is, I'm pulling it up right now, "You'll Never Believe Who Chomsky Would Absolutely Vote For, But Her Ex-President Husband," and it just got cut off at that, "Already
Knows.
So I posted the article recently. Professor Chomsky did an interview with Al Jazeera, and he said that he would absolutely vote for Hillary Clinton if she was a nominee, but he said he would absolutely vote for the Democrat if he were in a swing state because of the reactionary right-wing version of this Republican Party. And so, of course, I was roundly criticized for even posting that because, you know, first of all, they said, oh, he never said he'd vote for Hillary, but you really would have to be an idiot not to, make that conclusion from what he said. It's Al Jazeera's fault, not Chomsky's fault for saying that. But Chomsky does not live in a swing state. He lives in Massachusetts, and he has, in fact, voted over and over again for Democrats. So why don't you talk a little bit about that and about the response you've received for posting that article?
Okay, starting with the response, what I found fascinating but not surprising was how emotionally people responded to any criticism of Chomsky. And let's say, putting out there that what I wrote was factually incorrect or could be proven wrong, I did find it very disconcerting how just even bringing up criticism of him in and of itself was an issue. But what I said is I did a little digging to see that he has written that he's voted for Clinton in 92. He, quote-unquote, strategically didn't vote in 68 because he believed that Nixon would have ended the Vietnam War sooner, but he couldn't vote for Nixon. So he has his own personal strategy on voting that I might disagree with or do disagree with. But my point, I think, one of my main points is that over the past couple of election cycles, people like Chomsky and earlier the late Howard Zinn, in my opinion, have written about Democratic candidates and strategic voting in a way that could be seen as irresponsible because, as you and I know, the average person isn't looking at the election through a radical lens. They're looking at it through a lens that they're being you know, almost programmed to see through the corporate media. And if you can use Chomsky quotes to justify yourself voting for Bernie Sanders or this one or that one, it kind of, you know, solidifies that you're making this progressive, at least, choice. And I
right.
think that that what Chomsky did was sort of give, in a way, run the risk of allowing people to see even a Hillary victory as like a Pyrrhic victory for the progressive movements, when there is no statistical evidence to back that up. And the one other thing I did in this particular article is, because he voted for Bill Clinton in 92, I recycled material that I've been writing since 96, I think, of what Clinton and Gore were responsible for, and just got to show that this is what we get when we vote for the so-called lesser evil. So I think it's a fair conversation to have of saying, is this a worthwhile strategy, and B, is it dangerous that Chomsky's using his vast influence on the left to potentially to give cover for people to support Democrats?
Well, another thing of the criticism that actually, I didn't even post your article yet. I just posted the Al Jazeera article, and it kind of forced me off of Facebook for a while because I get so frustrated. You know, my sister has stage 4 cancer, trying to take care of her. I don't have time to babysit these people who, you know, refuse to look at facts. They whether it's Sanders or Chomsky, we're just dealing with right now, they just want to ignore basic facts, and it's super frustrating. And so I got called shameful and all kinds of names for even posting that article. Well, I'm not the one that said I would vote for Hillary Clinton. Chomsky's the one who said he would vote for Hillary Clinton. But another thing that seems to be, like, the people who had milder opposition to what I posted said that if we criticize Chomsky about his voting strategy, then we are criticizing everything Chomsky's ever done.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that people like you and I get called purists, you know, like, or moral absolutists, when we're saying that, well, I'll speak for myself, I will say that Noam Chomsky has been someone that has taught me an incredible amount and influenced me very much in terms of analyzing corporate media and seeing through how to decode what I'm being programmed to think. And I feel eternally indebted to him. And as I've written many times this week, I also believe that when I reached a point in my own personal development where I could comfortably disagree with him or Howard Zinn and so on, it was actually really powerful to not just fall under his spell and that, well, Chomsky said it and therefore it's true, and as opposed to saying, well, it's okay to agree with him on X amount of things and disagree with him on others. And it isn't like I'm in no way am I saying that. I kept over and over saying this in these endless threads that I've learned so much from him. I'm not criticizing him personally. I'm in the midst of where we're at right now. I'm curious as to why he would A, have this strategy, and B, choose to announce it exactly at this time. And I didn't really think that's such a controversial thing to even mention.
Well, I think what he said is, like, super controversial. I mean, you pointed out many things that Bill Clinton and, well, that occurred during the Clinton-Gore regime, but you didn't even go into all of the just absolutely appalling things that Hillary Clinton has been involved in, not just since she was Senator or Secretary of State either.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like her name popped up in an article I wrote about 2 months ago about the concept of rape apologists back when she was defending rapists as a lawyer many years ago. We're talking about professional criminals here, and so because the Republicans are getting increasingly cartoon-like in their extremity, their extremeness, it seems like people get caught up in saying, well, we can't let them in. And how many times have we heard that? And of course, everything I just said right there will be misconstrued as me saying that, well, I have no problem with Trump being president. At the end of the day, the thing that I think you and I would agree with Chomsky, where he says very often, is that the election, is a big spectacle that just gets in the way. And that was the end point of my article here,
right,
and everything written about Bernie Sanders in the past 2 or 3 months, is that we're wasting so much of the meager energy on the left to organize for Bernie Sanders or to debate about elections, when every single day we're losing out on creating the type of movement that would create the change we need. It's never going to happen by an election. So if you want to go in on November, whatever the date is, the 8th, and go in and pull a lever and leave, it's also fine. I'm not telling anyone who to vote for, whether they should vote. What I'm saying is, why are you dedicating so much time and energy towards supporting corporate candidates when we are really at the point of no return in terms of social, economic, and environmental collapse?
Well, yeah, and this massive devotion to imperial war that is literally sucking our communities, our families dry, our communities dry. It's destroying the environment, the Pentagon, and these endless wars. And I just wonder if all these, you know, tens of thousands of people who are going out to hashtag feel the burn, if they would be involved in, you know, ending the wars, or if they didn't allow themselves to be dispersed and co-opted by, you know, during Occupy or whatever, what we could accomplish. But these people got sucked into the Obama campaigns. These people are getting sucked into to hashtag feel the burn. And it's just like disheartening to me. And also, I was wondering today when I was thinking about our interview, I've run for office 3 times. I've run on all 3 times. I've run on amazing platforms that not only address, you know, what Sanders addresses in a very establishment way. I don't think anything that Sanders says is revolutionary. And, you know, I address these things in a very revolutionary way that would actually help people. Not only that, but I always, you know, even when I was running for governor, I thought that the wars and foreign policy were so important, California and the National Guard being used, and our tax money, billions of dollars flow from California to the federal government. So, but I always ran as either an independent or with a socialist party, and I didn't get any energy. And so I was wondering, gosh, what if I had run as a Democrat? First of all, I wouldn't be able to look at myself in the mirror at all, but I wonder if I would have got more energy. And it just like pisses me off that people think that that's where the solutions lie.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's the heartbreak of it. And when I do think about these things, that I do, I say to myself, I guess it's very, very challenging for the average American to let go of the two-party lie, because it's sort of like jumping off this cliff and hoping that you sprout wings, because it's like we've been told all along, this is the foundation of our democracy, this is what makes us, you know, the land of the free, and this is what, and the differences between the parties are so drastic, and the debates will cover, and so we hear all these marvelous lies,
right.
And so to let that go, apparently, I mean, I can't even calculate how many words I've written over the years on these topics, really starting strongly in 96 after 4 years of the first Clinton administration. I sometimes cut and paste from those same articles today.
Right.
and I mean, it's not laziness, it's just there's no reason to change the words. There's literally, and so I understand that people are making decisions pertaining to electoral choices based on the evidence they're being given, but the world has changed. There's a lot more access to other evidence, and as you and I can attest to, right on our own Facebook pages, there ourselves and others are constantly providing links and challenges to other information, saying, check this out. If you don't, you know, you don't have to listen to me. Check this out. Here's other information. And it's confirmation bias. They don't want to hear it. It's like they just can't let go of the two-party lie, because it'll destroy so much of their foundation of what America is about. And then as a result, America is just imploding from within. And they're out there exactly what you said, calling a Democrat running for president a revolutionary. I mean, it's the absurdity should be laughable, but it's not laughable because the stakes are too high.
Well, and we're both very active on Facebook, and what I notice with all my contacts is, even though there wasn't really, Facebook wasn't really that, it was just starting, I think, in 08, during that campaign, is that all the people who got so excited about Obama and then got so devastated by Obama are the same ones that are getting excited about hashtag feel the burn.
Exactly. And in the middle, and in the middle, they still, in 2012, it was kind of like Occupy had started, Facebook had really, and Twitter had really begun to influence discussions. It didn't make a difference. It's like, and I just recently watched the documentary about Shirley Chisholm's candidacy in 1972, and some parts of the conversations could have just been plucked out verbatim, and I could have posted and said, I had this conversation yesterday about this election, and you realize that the way the vehemence with which Americans cling to the two-party lie is going to be we're going to pry that lie from their cold dead hands, as the NRA saying goes, because they just won't let go of it, and they're just, the question is how many times you're going to get fooled. It just seems every single time.
How many times am I going to get a chance to get fooled? That's how many times I'll be fooled. And so what you were saying earlier is that you've been writing and you're starting to copy and paste and just change names and stuff. That's what I've been doing. But I'm so grateful to you because I've just gone into a long blah. It's like my sister will say, why don't you write something about this? I'll say, oh, my God, I wrote that article so many times. I don't even feel like writing about, I don't want to write anything right now, you know. And so I write every 2 months. I have to turn in an article for a newsletter, and I just find an old one and just change the names in a little bit, you know. But my blog just passed 1 million. It's at 1,159 hits since I started it. And one of the reasons, I think, is because of you have been involved in it lately, and I just haven't been able to, so I'm so grateful to you. But the one that has the most hits so far, like I get weekly stats, is the one, we're going to transition from Chomsky now to your other article called What If Hashtag Feel the Burn is Just a Hope and Change Sequel. So we're going to transition over. We have been talking about Sanders a little bit, but a lot of people on my blog are very smart. Their question to you is like, what if it's the sequel? So talk a little bit about that. You have been writing a lot about exposing Sanders. And for me, it's not like I couldn't care less about Bernie Sanders. I don't know him. I can't say I like him or dislike him. He's one of the few politicians that have been there for a long time that I haven't met yet. And so, and really, personality wouldn't matter to me much anyway. It's just policy. And so, to me, him, you know, I was really dismayed when he ran as a Democrat, but it has been, like I said earlier, very strategically successful. But I see people writing in articles still the independent from Vermont. Well, first of all, even when he was an independent, he voted more with the Democrats than many Democrats did.
Yeah. Just to defend my article title, obviously, like you read aloud the other title, of this almost ridiculous title of the Chomsky article.
Uh-huh.
It's like I'm trying to teach myself the old dog new tricks in terms of people like clickbait titles, and you want these people, and so if I said Feel the Burn is a Hope and Change rerun, half of people wouldn't have clicked on it because
they'd be like,
oh, there he goes again hating on Sanders again. So I gave them the option to think that I was questioning it, and of course I would love to be proven wrong on this, but Sanders' record is public. he's this whole independent socialist thing just seems to be almost like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, I mean, who are we kidding? He's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And he chose to run as a Democrat and has been said on national television that if and when I drop out of the campaign in the election, I will support the Democratic candidate as I do every 4 years. And so how, under what definition is that independent a socialist? I don't know.
Right.
And it's hard to realistically imagine him garnering, and you know, the way the electoral process works and the silliness of the primaries and caucuses, it works in the favor of the people with the most money and the biggest machines on the ground. That's not controversial to say. So barring some unbelievable scandal, it's hard to imagine him beating Hillary Clinton. So therefore, he's going to hold her hand and raise it above her head together, and there'll be photo ops galore at the Democratic convention this summer. And what I say is, if he truly believed in what he is saying, and if he truly was a revolutionary, he wouldn't be running as a Democrat, or he'd be saying, I will not endorse anyone who doesn't agree with my platform. And of course, we've heard that before. We've heard mm-hmm. that from Kucinich and
right.
all the way back to '88 with Jesse Jackson. I mean, it's the same word for word. So Bernie Sanders is not a revolutionary. He talks like a liberal. And what people seem to forget every 4 years, it seems to just be erased from their memory, that candidates say whatever they feel they need to say to get elected, and they don't follow through on what are allegedly called promises. You know, so if he says, I'm going to give free college tuition, the first thing I could say is, I don't know, can I say this on the air? Bullshit. I mean,
right.
he's not. And it's not he's not. And then the next thing we could say, bringing it back to your discussion of the war, is like, at what cost? So we're going to celebrate for the college tuition, which would be a wonderful idea. We should also erase student debt while he's at it. But what about all the drones that he's still going to be sending? I mean, so who's going to be celebrating in Pakistan and Afghanistan for the college kids in the U.S.? I mean, so what compromises are American liberals ready to make? And we know what the answer is to that. So it's like he himself, when he first showed up in Iowa, compared himself to Obama in 2008, saying in 2008 nobody thought he could do it, and they said he was a nobody and he didn't have this experience. And he basically said he was picking up that mantle and he was running, on that platform. So it's not, he doesn't even need me to compare Field and Burns to Hope and Change. He's doing it himself. And so everyone that was readily fooled by Obama in 2008 and then still imagined that he was going to turn into some stark radical after being reelected in 2012, like you said, they're lined up right now behind Bernie Sanders, and maybe even more vehemently in some ways, which mm-hmm. is particularly disturbing. I could understand the power of seeing a person of color as a leading
right.
candidate.
Right.
I could see that in 2008, and when I gave talks back then, I did take some heat from people saying, well, you don't understand the symbolism. I said, I know, I don't. But
right.
this is different. This is a man who's establishment all the way. He went out and campaigned for Democrats all the way. He was campaigning in '92 for Bill Clinton, and he does whatever. And he's quoted as saying, "I do whatever I can do each 4 years to get Democrats elected." And so he doesn't need me or you to explain what the Democrats are then doing those next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's going to run under the mantle of Democrat, well, then he needs to have that anchor around his ankle and recognizing the moment you say that, that you're saying, I'm running as a Democrat, then you've embraced these corporate-owned war criminals.
Right, exactly. I couldn't say it better. So we are running out of time, which is amazing to me. It's gone really fast. So talk about your newest book, Occupy These Photos. Your latest book.
Thank you. It's a collection of photos that I've taken at New York City rallies and protests and marches from basically the start of Occupy Wall Street in Ducati Park up till this where Black Lives Matter first really kicked in New York. So it covers a pretty wide range of issues, and it just was a chance for me to put the put some photography out there and to put some faces to the words that I'm always writing. And if people are interested, the title is Occupy These Photos. The easiest way is just to go to Amazon or just type it into your search engine. It's available as an ebook and also as a special edition print copy. And I hope people would want to check it out and spread the word.
And they can check out almost every one of your articles. Sometimes some slip by me on some very, you know, especially trying days I have here. But your articles can be found at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and there's a link to your website at every article that I post. But what is your website so my listeners can I think a lot of my listeners are very familiar with you, but this will give them a chance to delve deeper into what you say.
The name of the blog is Nikki Z, and it's a WordPress blog, so it's NikkiZWordPress.com. And as you said, all my articles, which you post, which World News Trust posts, and so on, have a little bio at the bottom that include a bunch of links for the books and for my blog, my Facebook page. People could just, you know, I have my personal page, I have a Nikki Z page, so I'm very active, you know, sharing a lot of content all the time, not even close to just being my own work, whatever I find interesting, and as you said, it's pretty easy to find me.
Well, I just wanted to mention one other thing that I was thinking about when we were talking about the Chomsky piece. A lot of people on Facebook said that Al Jazeera was a rag, you know, and so they were responsible for what Chomsky actually said, I guess. But to me, it's like when Bush was president, wasn't Al Jazeera like the go-to news source for everybody, and now not so much?
I mean, thank you for saying that, because it's fascinating to see how this confirmation bias, where people are just going to only factor in the evidence that proves their point. I'll say it one more time. Noam Chomsky has played a valuable role in educating people all across the world and encouraging them to think for themselves. That doesn't make him infallible. If you are our criticism, it doesn't mean we hate him and see everything he's ever done is invalid. I think it's healthy to have debates about public figures and to avoid any sense of hero worshiping or a hive mind that if Chomsky says it, it's automatically true. And I could speak from personal experience. I'll say it again. When I reached a comfort zone where I could start really challenging, where I learned from some figures and then I began to comfortably disagree with them, it was a really great place to be. And I think that if people are looking to evolve and to constantly keep an open mind and take in as much information as possible, it's not going to happen if we look to people like Chomsky as their words being carved in stone. And one other thing that I mentioned in the Chomsky article was how he and so many celebrities in 2004 came out in that Anybody But Bush thing, and
right.
Kerry lost anyway. And so my point was, like, the celebrity left is not really that powerful anyway. Like, they can't sway elections and so on. So if I were in Chomsky's situation and people asked me about elections, I would say I have no interest in talking about that. Let's talk about on-the-ground movements. Let's talk about solidarity. Let's talk about creating coalitions. Let's talk about big-picture issues like patriarchy, white supremacy, capitalism. Let's talk about the stuff that the root causes, the foundations, and create some real change instead of looking at the equivalent of a worldwide wrestling match and pretending that it's not fixed.
Well, another thing that gets set up on Facebook is that we got to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, we can't, everything is either all good or all bad. It seems like it set up this situation where there's no gray areas, where there's no opportunity for reflection and growth. It's just knee jerk. Everything's bad or everything's good.
Yeah, and I guess that's a very comforting place to be. And ironically, depending on what issue I'm writing about, if people disagree with me, one of the first things they'll say is that my writing lacks nuance, that I see things black and white. But that tends to be, I think, when I write about issues like patriarchy and male patterns.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I say there is no nuance
black
there.
And white. Yeah, I mean, killing and
yeah.
more, I think, black and white. But
yeah.
It's like, you know, if people never criticize me, if people always kept me on the pedestal,
I would never have grown. I would never have started to think of things that I never even would have thought of to think of. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And tell me if you agree with this. To me, those are the greatest moments of all, when you find out that something that you really believed in firmly is based on a flawed foundation, and you have to rethink it and rebuild from the ground up. I love those moments. So I just lack nuance when I'm writing about things like rape culture. Yeah, there is no nuance.
There is no nuance for something like that. Absolutely not.
But in other issues, yeah, I'm happy to question and be questioned.
Well, I remember when I had that show about male supremacy, and to me it was like you were very energized by that
Absolutely.
Show. And it was very nice to hear from you that something that we produced was so transformative. So, Mickey Z, it's so nice to talk to you, and keep up the good work, and maybe I'll return to Facebook when I'm not so annoyed with everybody.
That sounds like it might be a while. Thank you so much, Cindy. It's always a pleasure. Thank you, as always.
That's the Soapbox for this week. I hope, as always, you were informed and inspired. Go to Mickey's website, go to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and check out the articles. Share them, comment on them, let us know what you think. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank Mickey Z for being my friend and for the work he does and for helping out on the Soapbox. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Well, I'm Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to The Soapbox. Peace out for now.